UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome to the show. Our topic today is minimally invasive treatments for venous disease, and my guest is Dr. Mark Passman. He's a vascular surgeon, professor of surgery, and the director of the UAB Vein Program. Dr. Passman, explain a little bit about venous disease. Who is at risk, and tell us about the different types of venous insufficiency that we'll be talking about today.
Well, it's nice to join you today. There are generally two categories of venous disease problems. There's the blockage or thrombotic category, and then there are the venous flow issues. So the blockage or thrombotic category generally involves venous thromboembolism, deep vein thrombosis, and the risk for pulmonary embolism. In general, the risk profile of those patients include individual risk factors such as age, greater than 70, prior personal history of clotting issues, family history of clotting issues, and then other associations like smoking and obesity, which can be amplified in high-risk situations, periods of immobility, injury, severe illness, and even travel. The other group of venous problems tend to fall in the category of venous insufficiency or venous reflux, essentially venous flow problems. And these can range anywhere from common spider veins and varicose veins all the way up to complex venous skin changes and venous stasis ulcerations to other severe venous flow-related congestion-type problems. The general risk factors for venous flow issues can include patients who've had prior deep vein thrombosis where there's damage to the vein valves, or it can be a primary problem where there's essentially wear and tear on the venous valves that leads to leakage and the ambulatory venous hypertension issues that can result.
As far as clinical presentation, Dr. Passman, of course, with superficial venous reflux or varicose veins, spider veins, sometimes you can see those. But with deep vein thrombosis, not necessarily. Tell us about some of the signs and symptoms that someone might have.
Well, for deep vein thrombosis, the patient who presents with unilateral leg pain or swelling should always be a concern for a deep vein thrombosis until proven otherwise. Because certainly for acute deep vein thrombosis, that patient is at risk for pulmonary embolism until they're effectively anticoagulated. If you look at all patients who present with deep vein thrombosis, about 25% of those patients will have pain and or swelling. But there can certainly be some other subtle presentation type symptoms. For patients who have really severe venous thrombotic occlusion, they'll present with the typical phlegmasia type leg where there's significant venous congestion, discoloration, purplish discoloration. And when that gets at its most extreme, it can start compromising arterial inflow and perfusion to the extremity. So those that present with acute deep vein thrombosis, it's usually a sudden onset of that type presentation. On the other hand, those that have had deep vein thrombosis in the past, it's very common to have post-thrombotic syndrome. So it may be several weeks or several months or even years after their deep vein thrombosis acute episode, but they still have ongoing swelling and general congestion in the leg. And with that, and over time, they can start developing hyperpigmentation around the ankles, some venous eczema, skin changes at the ankle that make the skin really fragile and eventually lead to venous ulceration. So that's more on the venous thrombotic side. For patients who have varicose vein, never had a deep vein thrombosis before, they can have the spider veins or varicose veins, which you can see. They will have complaints that can range from pain, discomfort, throbbing in the leg, limb-dependent swelling, heaviness, itching, things like that. But when you examine the leg, it's hard to know if the spider veins or the varicose veins are just the tip of the iceberg or it is reflective of a bigger flow issue in the leg. And that's where additional testing, including venous ultrasound, could better differentiate the flow pattern and whether or not there's more involvement of the bigger veins. Those with varicose veins and spider veins, about 4 to 6% will progress over time to the more advanced venous findings, similar to those that have post-thrombotic syndrome, where you can develop the skin changes and eventually the ulceration. And although there are two different categories and two different pathways, the common pathway for both venous thrombotic issues and venous insufficiency issues is what's termed ambulatory venous hypertension. So, you know, effectively, the hypertension in the venous system, the congestion that you get, can lead to all those advanced findings, whether it starts as a deep vein thrombosis or a primary valve reflux issue.
Doctor, once you've differentiated what the flow issue is, how has it been treated in the past? What's different now? And are there some exogenous methods that you would recommend as a first line of defense before you would discuss a minimally invasive option?
Well, sure. Well, let's expand first on how you can differentiate the venous disease with diagnostic testing, because that will help dictate the appropriate therapy. So the cornerstone of any venous evaluation from an imaging standpoint is venous duplex ultrasound. And there's different types of venous ultrasound testing that's available. The most common type is just to look for deep vein thrombosis as part of a evaluation for clot. And that's usually to screen the veins and the presence of clot or absence of clot. And that's usually the routine ultrasound. But the more extended, more comprehensive ultrasound also will test the venous valve function and what's called venous valve closure time. A refluxing vein valve will have backward flow. And anything greater than a second or so of backward flow in a deep vein is usually consistent with venous reflux, as opposed to a venous valve that will close crisply and such, and that would be a normal valve. So, you know, typically, if it's a venous thrombotic problem, we're just looking for DVT with a venous ulcer. But if it's a venous flow issue, we're actually mapping where the venous valve dysfunction occurs, which veins they occur in, because that will help dictate what that patient needs. In addition to venous ultrasound testing, there are some patients who need some advanced imaging, and that can include CT venography, MR venography, diagnostic contrast venography, and intravascular ultrasound testing. And there may be specific instances where we will do more extended imaging along those lines. And then depending on what the imaging shows and what the actual problem is, we'll come up with a treatment plan for that particular patient. For patients who have deep vein thrombosis, the standard evidence-based guideline is that all those patients should be on some form of anticoagulation. And those guidelines are very well published. American College of Chest Physicians provides information and evidence-based ratings for those recommendations. In addition, patients who have deep vein thrombosis traditionally are also treated with compression therapy once they're on the anticoagulation. That will help with a lot of the symptoms and the swelling and the post-thrombotic tendencies that they can develop later on. Aside from that, there are some minimally invasive treatments for deep vein thrombosis that are also supported by evidence-based guidelines that use catheter technology to remove the clot. And whether that's with catheter-directed thrombolysis or various aspiration-type catheters we have, or combinations of that. For patients who have clot that's less than a few weeks old, may have significant compromise extending up into their iliac femoral veins. Those that have a reasonable life expectancy greater than a year, those patients that have good functional capacity, those patients may be candidates for those advanced minimally invasive catheter clot removal options, and should be evaluated at a center that can provide those services. So that's for clot. For patients who have chronic clot and significant post-thrombotic issues, there may still be some options later on for recanalizing those chronically occluded vein segments with catheters, using balloons and stents to try and reopen those veins. So there may be some role even for chronic clot issues later on where there might be some benefit of treatment. That's different than the traditional treatments for clot, which operatively involve venous thrombectomy or surgically removing those clots. That's an operation we still do occasionally, but with all these advanced catheter-based therapies, we don't need to do those as often, nor do we have to do the complex venous reconstructions that we used to do a lot more of. But still, there may be candidates where you just can't open them with a catheter that you might need to consider those open traditional operative options. For varicose vein problems and venous reflux problems, the traditional operations used to be venous stripping, where you make a couple incisions in the legs and mechanically strip out the long saphenous veins in the leg. Phlebectomy, where you make incisions and avulse or remove the varicose veins directly. That used to be the traditional approach. What's really happened and evolved in the last 10 to 15 years, instead of making incisions now, the minimally invasive options include things like endovenous ablation, where you can use a laser catheter or a radio frequency catheter to close down the saphenous vein instead of stripping it. There are some newer technologies that also include using glue or foam sclerotherapy to occlude those vessels. The techniques we use for the actual varicose veins now are use much smaller incisions, gentle hook techniques. We also have scoping systems that allow us to make tiny incisions and use scopes to image all the veins and directly see the vein. So what we used to do with, you know, many more incisions and larger incisions, we can do with much smaller incisions these days and fewer incisions. So that's where the evolution from the traditional approaches, both for clot and venous flow varicose vein problems, have evolved to minimally invasive techniques.
It's such an interesting field that you're in, Dr. Passman. So in summary, tell other physicians what you'd like them to know about minimally invasive treatments for venous disease and when you feel it's really important that they refer to a specialist such as yourself.
Well, the thing with venous problems, you know, especially when it gets into patients who present to their physicians with all kinds of complaints, is sometimes they can be underappreciated, sometimes underappreciated by the patients, sometimes by the physicians, because there's so many other medical issues to take care of. For patients, you know, a lot of times when the venous symptoms they have will develop over a long period of time, and people are just too busy to worry about it. And it's not till it gets to a critical point where, you know, they start seeking medical attention and assistance. But the reality of many of the venous problems, especially the varicose veins and venous flow issues, is that certainly from a quality of life standpoint, you can help impact patients with earlier evaluation. And those that are appropriate for treatment, early intervention can not only help their current quality of life, but may change their natural history and progression over time. For venous clot issues, you know, again, the most important part of that is awareness for patients to know their risk factors, to know when they might be in a high-risk situation, and for physicians to recognize patients that might be at risk and to ask them and do a venous risk assessment on them for clot. Because when they're exposed to those high-risk situations, they may not know they have high-risk individual factors. And, you know, whether they're in the hospital or undergoing a big operation or severely ill, the biggest advantage of prevention is that you can prevent all the sequelae of clot. So early identification using therapeutic anticoagulation or prophylactic anticoagulation as a preventative strategy for patients who are at risk, especially in the hospital, can have significant impact on their future venous potentials.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pastman, for being with us today and sharing your expertise on this topic. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.